So all month we have been in the series called Good News, where we've been looking at the good news of the gospel, of what Jesus came to do. And we looked at the scripture in Luke chapter 4 that says, where Jesus, he stood up in the synagogue in his hometown of Nazareth, and he read from the scroll of Isaiah. He said, "The Spirit of the Lord is on me, because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners and recovery of sight for the blind, to set the oppressed free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." All right, so let's take a closer look at this passage. Let's leave it up for just a minute. Okay, so 2 weeks ago, we talked about freedom for the prisoners and what that looks like. Last week, we looked at recovery of sight for the blind, those two things that Jesus said he was sent to proclaim. And today we're going to talk about to set the oppressed free. So as far as the rest, like the proclaiming of the year of the Lord's favor, we may get to that next week. We may get to that in another series later on. I don't know yet. We'll see what happens. Is it okay for me to say I don't actually have a plan for next week? Okay. Huh? No. But that's where we're at. So check this out. Okay, let's look at this scripture. So Jesus said that he was sent to proclaim the good news to the poor and to proclaim freedom for the prisoners and recovery of sight for the blind. So to proclaim something, it means to announce it or to declare it, right? So if something is proclaimed to you, you still have the responsibility of responding to it and then acting on it and applying it. So for example, every year around January especially, every gym proclaims the good deals for joining. They tell you the benefits of a healthy lifestyle and exercise. And a gym membership can help you with that. So they proclaim this good news to anybody that will hear it. But that doesn't mean that I get healthy and lose weight just by hearing their proclamation. You get what I'm saying? See, I have to hear that proclamation, and then I have to respond to that good news and personally take action to make a difference in my life. So you guys get me? So you understand the importance of the word proclaim here? Okay. So the past 2 weeks, we have talked about your responsibility of hearing what was proclaimed and then acting on it. So in the same way, Jesus, he did not come and force his truth on anyone. He did not try to convince anyone that his news was in fact good. He was sent to proclaim it to all who would hear. So he proclaimed that you can be free. And he proclaimed that you can receive sight. But ultimately, you have to be the one to choose freedom. You have to be the one to choose sight and take action to make that happen. All right, got that? Okay, everyone good? Okay. I'm going to try to move through. I got a lot of notes. I'm going to try to move through this really fast because it's a beautiful day outside. So, does anyone actually want to go fishing today? Yeah. It's perfect day for fishing. So I'm going to talk fast. All right. So now here's the cool part. You guys ready for the cool part? So we look at this scripture. Throw that back up there for me again, Steve. Thank you. So if we look at this scripture, Jesus did not say that he was sent to proclaim that the oppressed could be free. He said that he was sent to set the oppressed free. See, this is the only part of this passage, even the next one, he was sent to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor. This is the only part that the word proclaim was not there. See, he isn't just telling the oppressed that they can be free. He was sent to take action to make it happen. So why is this different from what we've already talked about? So simply put, regardless of our economic, our social, or our cultural status, we are all in need of the freedom from things of this world that are holding us captive and are blinding us to God's truth. Everybody needs to hear that proclamation. See, we all have to hear that and make a decision how we will react to the good news that is being shared with us. We have to make the choice and we have to do the work to surrender our lives to God. Or we remain captive and blind. However, the truly oppressed people that Jesus came to set free, they are in situations, they're in their situations, they're oppressed because of an injustice. Now, this injustice could have been caused by someone else, but it could have also been caused by themselves. Sometimes we oppress ourselves. So you remember a couple of weeks ago, we established who the poor are that Jesus came to proclaim the good news to. See, the poor in spirit are those that live with a humble attitude and submission to God. But the term poor also includes three groups of people that the lower social classes of the time, and they needed protection from the rich and powerful. They needed protection from the oppressors. So these would have been the economically poor, the orphans, and the widows. See, these were the vulnerable groups in their society. They had been wrongfully oppressed and impoverished. Once again, either by others or by their own decisions. See, these were the people that begged for food. These were the people that had no economic or social status for whatever reason. And Jesus came to set them free because they had no power to do so on their own. See, they needed help to overcome these situations that they were in so that they could experience the freedom of the good news, so they could experience sight. See, the groups of people that were recipients of Jesus' justice included the widows, the orphans, the refugees, the prisoners, the slaves, the poor, and the sick. See, each of these groups, they have specific needs that kept them from being able to participate in the aspects of the life of their community. I'll let that sink in for a minute. They were unable to fully participate as equals in their community. See, justice involves helping people by meeting those needs, by filling that gap. And Jesus, he set the standard of how we are supposed to deal with injustice in our society. So, forces that deprive people of basic community life, equality in participating in community life, they are condemned as oppression. Those things that keep people from being able to participate as equals. I'm going to say it over and over again because I want you guys to hear that part. See, to oppress is to use power for one's own advantage at the expense of others' basic rights in the community. To do justice is to correct that abuse and to meet those needs. Injustice is depriving others of their basic needs or failing to correct matters when those rights are not met. So I just threw out a bunch of definitions for you. I was going to make slides, but I just forgot. Is everyone tracking so far? Okay. See, injustice is either a sin of commission or omission. See, in other words, we are guilty of injustice when we do not engage in advocating for justice. See, if we are not advocating actively for justice, then we are participating in injustice either actively or passively. By allowing something to happen that you could help out, you are helping the problem. You're not being part of the solution. Is anyone uncomfortable yet? Anyone a little? Yeah, this is uncomfortable. See, this is something that most people don't like to talk about, right? But see, the theme of justice, it is present throughout the entire biblical story. It was the primary task. It was one of the primary tasks of Jesus during his time on earth. We just read that. That's what he was said. It's one of the things he was sent here to do. He taught about it constantly. You can't read through the Sermon of the Mount in Matthew 5 without constantly running into the idea of justice. So why has the idea of doing justice become almost a controversial topic in the church? Has anyone noticed that? I mean, it's uncomfortable, right? We don't like to be challenged, and we don't like to have things brought out that make us squirm a little bit and think, well, maybe I'm not doing enough. See, I think it's because a lot of other things. We have taken the idea of justice out of its biblical context, and we have applied human meaning and definition to it. So let's use our spiritual sight that we talked about last week to understand justice from God's perspective. All right, in Jeremiah 22, verse 3, it says, this is what the Lord says. Do what is just and right. Rescue from the hand of the oppressor, the one who has been robbed. Do no wrong or violence to the foreigner, the fatherless, or the widow, and do not shed innocent blood in this place. What does the Lord say? He says, do what is just and what is right. So the ideas of righteousness and justice are often linked throughout the biblical story. Their concepts are closely tied. So righteousness is an ethical standard that refers to having relationships between people that are right. Good relationships. See, you act righteously when you treat others as the image of God, even when they don't reflect it. See, all humans are equal in the eyes of God because he created all of us in his image. We all have the basic rights to be treated with dignity and fairness no matter who we are in the eyes of the world. That's easy to say, right? But it's hard to do. Righteous relationships with others can only happen when justice is done. So let's look at justice. Let's look at the biblical definition of justice. See, it has a bit more of a compound definition. So there's a Hebrew word, mishpat. And once again, I forgot to make slides. So if you're taking notes, it's M-I-S-H-P-A-T, mishpat. And basically, it means to treat people equally. See, but that also goes for both punishment and reward. But here's where it gets compound. So there's two kinds of justice that we're going to talk about. There's retributive justice, first of all. And that's what we're more familiar with. And it's what our justice system, our legal system, is based off of. See, it's based on providing justice for those who have had a wrong committed against them by requiring the guilty to provide retribution or to be punished in some way to make amends. See, this lends heavily on the concept of an eye for an eye. And if you don't know what Jesus said about an eye for an eye, read the Sermon on the Mount. See, if someone steals from you, they're required to return what they stole or to repay the debt. Some crimes, though, commit a debt that does not hold a clear monetary value, like broken relationships or emotional wounds. How do you put a price, a retributive price, on trauma and grief? You can't do it. See, I worked for a few years as a victim advocate in the judicial system. And I sat by so many people through trials who were hoping and praying through the entire process for just punishment to be served on their offender. But see, I noticed something. The moment that that verdict was read, no matter what the sentence was, I never saw immediate healing happen in the victim. Very often, the grief just changed colors a little bit. It just shifted a little bit. It was a different kind of sadness. See, punishment for one person does not provide healing for another. An eye for an eye can only make us all blind. But don't mishear me. Don't leave here and say, well, Carrie wants to break down the legal system. Don't say that. I'm not saying that crime should be left unpunished. What I'm saying is that the legal system, it serves a good purpose of helping to prevent future crimes from being committed by the offender. But retributive justice does not, cannot, and will not provide full physical, spiritual, and emotional healing for the victim. We need the other kind of justice too. The other kind of justice is restorative justice. See, and this is the process where healing can start to happen. See, unlike retributive justice, which is a response to a wrong that has been committed, restorative justice, it works to help the oppressed by ending the cycle of injustice. But it requires a radical and a selfless way of life. See, it's seeking out the vulnerable people in your society that are being taken advantage of in many different ways and advocating for them. And when it's done effectively, it can work to change social structures to prevent future injustice. It breaks cycles. It can end generational curses. And y'all, that's what Jesus did. That's the life that he lived. See, Jesus had a way of seeking out the forgotten and the outcast members of society. He healed lepers. These are people that you weren't supposed to get anywhere near because they were unclean. And then they're very, very contagious. He healed the blind, who most people assumed were blind because of a sin that they had committed or their parents had committed. So they were also unclean. He healed the crippled. He ate with tax collectors and Gentiles, non-Jewish people. A Jewish rabbi having dinner with a non-Jewish person? What? That's unclean. He talked, get this, he talked with women and children. You guys don't seem very shocked by that. You've heard this story before, haven't you? You know who Jesus is. See, Jesus was the embodiment of righteousness and justice. He was the example that God gave us to show us how he wants us to treat others. Do you guys ever read something in the Bible that just doesn't sit well with you? Like you read it and you're just like, I want to push back on that a little bit. Or like, God, did you really mean that? Like, is that really what happened? Is that what was said? It just makes you feel uncomfortable, so you avoid it. Anyone do that? Just me? No? Okay. Some of you are being honest. See, there's a story in Matthew and again in Mark that has always bugged me. And maybe it was just because I didn't have the ears to hear, the eyes to see. But when I was working on this message, I kept getting drawn to this story. And I'm like, I'm not using that. I'm not touching that. But then God started showing me a little bit different picture of it. So let's read through it together. It starts Matthew 15, verse 21. So Jesus and his disciples, they had just left Jerusalem, where he had just, if you read ahead of this a little bit in chapter 15, you'll find out he really ticked off the Jewish people, the religious leaders. And they weren't so happy. And when they weren't so happy, see, they were powerful. So leaving that place, Jesus withdrew to the region of Tyre and Sidon. A Canaanite, or if you read in Mark, it calls her a Syrophoenician, which is a compound word for Syro and Phoenician. So it's basically saying a multicultural woman. From that vicinity came to him crying out, "Lord, Son of David, have mercy on me. My daughter is demon-possessed and suffering terribly." Jesus did not answer with a word. So his disciples came to him and urged him, "Send her away, for she keeps crying out after us." And he answered, "I was sent only to the lost sheep of Israel." See, this doesn't feel on par with the Jesus I know. See, we literally just talked about how Jesus did not shy away from the non-Jewish people or the unclean. And he had previously healed Gentiles. But it had all happened in Jewish territories, in places like Jerusalem that were a majority of Jewish people with just a few Gentiles. But see, Jesus and his disciples had withdrawn to the region of Tyre and Sidon after John the Baptizer was executed. And Jesus had publicly offended the Pharisees in Jerusalem. So they were kind of letting things cool down just a little bit. See, he was being rejected by the lost sheep of Israel. And the region that he was in was known as being a hotbed of pagan activity. See, the Canaanite people and the Jews, they had a long history of butting heads. We don't have time to get into that today, but just know they didn't get along. What we need to note here is that Jesus is not just ignoring her out of spite or disinterest. He knew that responding to her request would shift his ministry from being focused on just healing of the Jewish nation to include all the nations of the world. See, if this woman was going to have a seat at his table, he needed to know that she understood who he was. So he threw out some stumbling blocks to see if her faith was true. So we continue. It says, the woman came and knelt before him and said, "Lord, help me." And he replied, "It is not right to take the children's bread and toss it to the dogs." Did Jesus just call this woman a dog? Like, does that not feel just weird? Like, no matter what time or what culture you're in, like, that's insulting. And this feels like an injustice. This feels like Jesus is committing an injustice against this woman. But see, there's a lot here that we miss on just a surface reading. See, Jesus is responding to this woman like the Jewish and the Canaanite people would expect him to. See, Jesus was the Jewish Messiah, first and foremost. He was sent to the Jewish nation. He was their Messiah that they had been waiting for and praying for generations. But the Jewish people were rejecting him. But see, this Canaanite woman, she knew who he was. And she called him the Son of David. That's recognizing him as the Jewish king. She submitted herself to him by requesting that he help her, by calling him Lord, by calling him the Son of David. And her response to being called a dog is beautiful. She says, "Yes, it is, Lord." She disagrees with him. I want to be her friend. She said, "Yes, it is, Lord. Even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from under their master's table." Then Jesus said to her, "Woman, you have great faith. Your request is granted," and her daughter was healed at that moment. See, this woman was so hungry for what Jesus had to offer her that she was willing to accept, put herself in a lesser position and sit under the table and beg for the crumbs that are being tossed aside by those that were given a seat. Yo, that's what it looks like to be poor in spirit. Just throwing that out there. That's what it looks like to walk humbly with God. See, because of this, Jesus had mercy on her. He proved that there was plenty of bread for not only the lost sheep of Israel, but for all the nations. And if you keep reading in Matthew 15, you'll see what Jesus does next. Like, he left there and he went on in this pagan community and he heals the lame, the blind, the crippled, the mute, and many others. And you know how they responded? These pagan people, non-Jewish, Gentile people, they praised the God of Israel. Then, you know what else he did? This is so cool, guys. He fed the crowd of over 4,000 men plus women and children that weren't counted in that number with 7 loaves of bread. See, this crowd was made up of people from all different nationalities. This was not a Jewish crowd. And there was enough for everyone to eat their fill, plus there was more left over than what they had begun with. See, this isn't just an amazing miracle. It is a metaphor that shows that Jesus, the bread of life, is more than enough to meet the needs of all the nations. So after a miracle like this, how can we doubt that God's abundance and provision is enough for everyone? Why do we assume that the children will starve if the dogs are given a crumb? But see, we may need that crumb later. I mean, what if we eat all of our loaf of bread and we don't have another one? How are we going to get our next loaf? So just to be safe, we should probably go ahead and gather all the crumbs and keep those for ourselves for later. Maybe we should even take the loaf that those other people have, just so we can have a spare. Because we don't need to run out. We need plenty of bread ourselves. And really, it's just smart planning and management, right? It's planning ahead. So a few nights ago, we were having breakfast for dinner. Anyone like breakfast for dinner? It's my favorite. So I cut up some strawberries and I put them in a bowl for us to all share on the table. Because I usually, when we have breakfast and stuff, I usually do that if I have any fresh fruit. I just put it on a bowl in the middle of the table. And as soon as I sat down the bowl, you know what happened? 2 little boys reached in and grabbed a fistful each of strawberries and put them on their plates, piling up strawberries on their plates. So there were still some in the bowl. That's pretty normal. But I reached over and I picked one up and I ate it. Didn't put it on my plate or anything, just ate it out of the bowl. And seeing me take one, there was another little hand that immediately went right back into the bowl and grabbed another bunch of strawberries to add to the pile that was already on his plate. See, he wanted to make sure that he had enough strawberries. He had as many as he wanted. So he was hoarding them all up. You know, as innocent as this story is, and no, I didn't get any more strawberries, the mindset behind this story can be very dangerous. See, it's human nature to hoard up resources and power and money out of fear of not having enough for ourselves and our people. But see, this is a scarcity mindset. And when it's left unchecked, it becomes the motivation and the justification for one person or even a group of people to oppress another. scarcity thinking causes injustice. But what Jesus is teaching in Matthew 15, it's that through him, there is more than enough to go around. See, we don't have to hoard if we trust God as our provider. And that's called an abundance mindset. And when you think this way, it allows you to live in a way that promotes righteousness and justice for everyone. But remember, doing justice is more than just avoiding doing injustice. It requires that you actively work toward providing justice for those that cannot advocate for themselves. We're instructed in Proverbs 31, speak up for those who cannot speak for themselves, for the rights of all who are destitute. Speak up, judge fairly, defend the rights of the poor and needy. See, this is what Jesus means when he says that he was sent to set the oppressed free. It is a call to action that we, as believers, we have to respond to it. We have to make a decision on how we are going to respond to it. All right, I need 4 volunteers. 4 volunteers. Shauna, Angela. Okay. 4, 1, Shauna, Daniela, Angela, 1 more, Christian, perfect. All right. All right, this is fun. Okay. I have a puppy. Can you tell? All right, so the good news. I have enough M&Ms for everyone. Well, the 4 of you, not everyone out there. They didn't raise their hands, so they don't get any. All right. Okay, so I have M&Ms. You guys like M&Ms? No one's allergic to M&Ms? That would be so sad. All right, so here's what we're going to do. Okay, we're going to, you get 2. Let's see here. Let's see. You get a high five. Okay. And, let me see. You're kind of tallish, right? Are you going to, here. Oh, that's not going to work. No, let's see. Let's make you work for this a little bit. I want to see Shauna have to work. Close your eyes, Shauna. Don't tell her. Okay. All right. Okay. Oh, Christian, I have something special for you. Put your hands behind your back. All right, so does this seem fair? I have more than enough M&Ms for everybody, but did I distribute them equally? No. All right, so Daniela, you have 2. So what are you going to do with those 2? Okay. See, she has 2. So she can hang on to 2, or she could share 1 with someone that doesn't have 1. So we'll see what she does. We'll see what kind of person she is. She does like candy, so. All right, so I'm sorry. I gave you a high five instead of an M&M, but see, you still have your hands free, though. So you could look around and see if there's maybe somebody else that's even in a worse position than you, that you could help. All right, so Shauna, where are your M&Ms? I had 2 for you. I don't know. I guess you're going to have to work for it. Do you think you could maybe find it just a little bit, put a little effort into it? Is it worth it for some M&Ms? All right, so maybe look around and see what you can find. And then Angela over here is already helping to set the oppressed free. And, oh. And then look at that. okay. And so now everyone helped one another out. We had someone that wasn't able to even pick up an M&M without the help of someone else. And so Angela, out of the kindness of her heart, untied the poor boy because you guys were all staring at me and I knew he'd be a good sport. Yeah, I'll give you a plant. And, and all right, so do you guys see what I'm saying here? Like sometimes there are people, like there might be enough resources for everyone, but sometimes people are given extra and they have the opportunity of sharing it or hoarding it. Sometimes people have to work a little bit. They have to look for it. They have to put a little effort into it. Sometimes people have nothing and have to depend on the kindness of others. And sometimes people have nothing and are limited on what they can even do. But what you just saw was justice, helping one another. All right, you guys go sit down, eat your M&Ms. See, the good news of Jesus is not just a one and done message of hope. It is a message of grace given to us that we receive. But once we receive it, we have to share it with others or else we didn't understand. See, Micah 6:8 tells us that God has shown us what is good and what is required of us. It says, what does the Lord require of you? To act justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God. Since this is a call to action, let's look with the action. Let's look at what, that's hard to say. How should I say that? Maybe I should read my notes. Let's look at what this action looks like right now. I said too many looks in that. See, this is the part that usually makes us squirm a little bit. You're like, what is she going to tell me I have to do? But see, doing justice, it's not convenient. Rarely ever will it be convenient for you. And it's usually not going to be comfortable either. It is making other people's problems my problems. It is taking the seat under the table sometimes with someone. It is actively loving your neighbor as yourself. So what does that look like on a daily basis? See, when we think about advocating for justice for others, most of you probably like have this mental image of people picketing at a courthouse or a rally or something like that. Somebody advocating for political change. Does anyone think that? Because that's kind of what I think when I think about advocating for justice. But something along those lines. And there is a time and a place for advocating for political change, but it is not limited to that. See, there are many other ways that we can advocate for the oppressed on a daily basis. See, remember, a defining characteristic of being oppressed is being unable to participate equally in community life. Like, poor Christian was unable to participate equally in the M&M search, and yet he's still snacking. So a way that we can advocate for justice is to do and give what we can to help raise them to be able to participate in the community as equals. So Angela untied him. She untied his hands so he could participate, so he had a chance. See, we have a perfect example of this kind of advocating here with us today. See, things like celebrating birthdays and going to a summer camp, fishing, kayaking, ziplining, all those amazing fun things that I'm really jealous that I can't go that week. Those are normal kind of things that kids experience, right? Usually. But see, foster kids, through no fault of their own, they often miss out on opportunities like this. So Royal Families Kids Camp, they fill in the gap. They're advocating for these kids. They're giving these kids an opportunity to celebrate their birthday and to participate in fun summer activities, to make friendships, to feel loved. It's an equalizing experience for these kids. See, they can, when they go back to school in the fall, they have fun things that they did this summer that they can go and tell their friends about. See, we have people in this room that they volunteer or work at local nonprofits that advocate for people that can't help themselves. We've been talking about the River Valley Child Advocacy Center. It's literally in the title of what they do. We have people in here that volunteer for CASA, that work for Safe Haven, that volunteer at Interfaith. And there's so many more. So many more. We have people sitting in this room that are already doing this. See, they work to set oppressed free in our community. We can help these nonprofits by coming alongside them to help them do the good work that they're already doing. But see, if you don't have time to volunteer, there's lots of other ways that you can help. You can donate items to Interfaith or to the Mustard Seed. You can bake cookies and drop them off for the ladies at Safe Haven to enjoy, just so they can feel loved. You can cook dinner for the guys at the Next Steps house. I'm sure they would love a home-cooked meal. Show them love. You can do yard work at the Child Advocacy Center. You can give financially to help provide supplies for Royal Families Kids Camp. Buy a fish. I know it's gimmicky, but it works. Got your attention, didn't it? But you can do more than that. You don't have to depend on nonprofits to do the work. You as an individual can help individuals. You can look for opportunities. I guarantee every single one of you knows a single mom. Babysit. Give her an opportunity to experience something. Give her a little freedom. Give her a night off. Give her a chance to take a bath without having fingers under the door. Offer to pick up groceries for your elderly neighbor. Mow their lawn. Take out their trash. See, if you don't know how to get started, or maybe you're an introvert like me and it's kind of hard to just like walk up and help somebody, get connected with Project Men's or Project Women's groups, because each month we do a project in the community. We serve in our community. But if none of that sounds appealing, then help support Project Community. Because we're trying to do the work of coming alongside these other nonprofits. Support us financially. Because if you give, that doesn't mean we're going to get a bigger building. We're good here. What it means is we're going to be able to raise the percentage of what goes back into our community. You see, we're conditioned to feel like we should just give out of our abundance. But no, give out of your poverty. Like the woman with two mites who gave all that she had, and Jesus blessed her. Give until it hurts. If you really believe the good news, if you really trust that God is your provision, then you have nothing to fear. You don't have to get that second fistful of strawberries. You can believe that you'll get your fill anyway. See, these all may seem like small things, but in the everyday little steps that we take in our life, that's what spreads the good news. That's what shows who Jesus is to our community, to the world around us. See, doing justice does not always require political action. Sometimes it does, but most of the time it's the daily activities that makes the difference. It does require consistent and genuine love. So how are you going to respond to this call to action to set the oppressed free?